of this Eitzu Yeda, of their bulletin, this appears up here.
Now, if you talk to some of the Hasidim like that I work with, it's like a whole workshop for me working in this place, a whole experience in and of itself. You know, I have to walk and all that. I work with Satmar Hasidim in a crystal importing company. And, you know, if you get, they like to ask a lot of questions. They're very curious about things outside of Williamsburg. And, you know, if you talk about things like jogging or whatnot, hey, it's important. You know, if you tell them you should jog, you should be in good health, it's important. And they're looking for like you from Mars. Like, what's so important about that? It's like pish posh. I mean,
But the amazing thing is that it really has influenced yeshiva world too. I mean, you see kid. I mean this yeshiva is certainly not a kibbutz surah yeshiva. And you see kids from this yeshiva jogging around. I see them jogging on the streets. I mean, it's affected. I mean, I think this today also, I think it's something we have friends. You see them jogging around. It's affected every level.
And as you're going into Scranton, when we were going there during the summertime, all of a sudden we see these kids, a whole bunch of yeshiva kids, the black and the hanging out, going on a long distance bike ride. They're on the way back already. So yes, it has affected them. And it's you see there are a lot of people who are actively involved in physical activity, but I think as if you approach it as becoming part and parcel of the Jewish culture, of the frum world and the yeshiva world, then people look at you with suspicion. Because, you know, on the one hand they're saying it's okay to be in good health, but don't institutionalize it. Because already they're thinking it's like the Greeks.
He has institutionalized it. And he asked you to look at three things. Number one, a healthy body is the same kedusha as a neshama. Number two, a healthy body is going to give the neshama the opportunity to flower. He used it as zricha, to shine. In other words, a sense of harmony, a total sense of harmony. You would have a lot to say about that. Okay?
You would have a lot to say about it, okay?
In the corner of my eye already, I saw your eyes starting to jump and sparkle. All right, and number three, that this is the personification of a micro tchias hamesim. You understand? This is what we mean by tchias hamesim. The ultimate togetherness, connectedness of guf, neshama, and the land. The only real estate that we have in the world, you see. So what's Hakstim out shining? What are you telling me about Satmar Chassidim? I want to talk about us. You understand what I'm saying? Okay? And you, sir, did me the honor of one night walking that hour, late at night, and we walked and we talked. You know why I walk. Because I've been so much a chote in Poshea. In hitting the books all of these years and having forgotten that I once used to be on a basketball court and a baseball field. And so that today we walk and we talk, or I take and I plug something into my ear to be able to hear Divrei Torah. Never did we have such an opportunity as today with all these cassettes and with all these tapes to be able not to waste a single minute and to join the Ruchnius and the Gufaniyut with a little $20 or $30 or $40 gadget that says every single second Morabu Masech Hashem in the ear, and you go.
I do that. I have one of the Daf Yomi tapes. So I work now in a firm place. His mother-in-law sees me coming today from lunch with my earphones on and my cassette. Say hello. She looks up at me. She looks down, and then I see this look back up at me, and I can see that, you know, I didn't say it there, but I can see what she's thinking.
Sugar.
Yeah, he's looking. Yeah, sugar. He's looking around with her, you know.
That's all. This is a business, and I'm sugar sitting here. This is it. Never have we been able to be Makadish every single second of time because of this, the Torah tapes and the Daf Yomi tapes and the telephone. You see. And this too is a rough cook. Rav Kook statement. There is no chol and there is no kodesh. Everything that you take and you make kodesh, and it's no longer chol.
The JSS kolah that you mentioned before, I remember we would get up 7 o'clock in the morning and we'd daven, and we learned till 10 o'clock at night. But at sometime in the afternoon.
JSS
kolah.
In the afternoon, there would be approximately an hour and a half, 2 hour break, and you were told to go swimming, to play tennis, to go to the basketball court. There were one or two individuals, I always remember, that didn't want to go. They wanted to stay in the base medrash. And the Rebbe would come and pick him up, and he said, put on your swimsuit, and he went swimming with you. Not only did he tell you to go, kicked you out of the base medrash, but he was in there swimming with us. And Rabbi Silk would go swimming, and Rabbi Willock would pick up a tennis racket, and he'd play tennis with us. And show that model. There's a time for learning. We learn until 10 o'clock. There's no question.
Although I can't be totally prejudiced.
Give me a second. Rav Huttner, in a prior generation, Rav Shiva of Chaim Berlin, was purported to have done the same, and he was a Talmud of Rav Kook, was purported to have done the same when, in recess, so to speak, he went out on the basketball courts and he refereed for the boys to make sure that they played. Yeah, he was saying.
I can't say that I have to be leveled. One of the partners in the business, his son-in-law, he's a Hasidic man who lives in Williamsburg with 9 kids who belongs to a racket club and plays regular racquetball 2-3 times a week, who's powerfully built, who was out there inside of the company sometimes practicing his backhand or whatnot, you know. And the boss of the company also goes out and has regular tennis partners. So, all right, I have to cover all bases. It seems like the richer they are,
the more liberal they are.
But the common guy who has the 9 and 10 kids hasn't got time to go out and play racquetball.
But, gentlemen, I am making a different point here. I'm not asking you to go play tennis or go out and do the racquetball or go swimming. I'm asking you to enter the world of Rav Kook to understand that when you do this, if you are chassidim and you say hineni muchan mezumon for any other mitzvah, okay, then at least mentally, subconsciously, you've got to be able to say hineni muchan mezumon lekayim mitzvah asay, and you figure out the rest. This is the total unity of the personality as is represented in Hanukkah. In other words, Chashmonai. That you have to have the neshama, there's no two ways about it. You have to have the nefesh, the ruach, to be able to motivate. That's your nuclear generator, that's your Chernobyl. But it can't go haywire. It's got to be directed, it's got to be full of skill, it's got to be worked at, so that you can achieve this total unity, this total harmony, and the ultimate perfection. And he does, and on page 4, I'll show you what he does with this Hanukkah. And you'll see how it all fits in. If you take a look at page 4, let's learn a little about Hanukkah. He quotes, in this short essay on Ner Hanukkah, he quotes the halacha in Masechet Shabbos. Ner Hanukkah, when it comes to Hanukkah, mitzvah lahanichal petach beito mibachutz. That the best way is to put it at the doorpost, at the doorway, in mezuzah on one side, and Ner Hanukkah on the other side, mibachutz, outside. Unlike the Dam Pesach, which was inside. Bedavke mibachutz, I mean, we know. Pirsum enisa. When you have sakana all around, and you know that the odds cannot be overcome, you put it, the pirsum enisa is enough that the family should see, you put it on the dining room table, and the kitchen table, and finish, and that's it. Vidayo, that's enough. There is an important symbolism that he has here, he says. Shichruro shel ruach Yisrael hamiyuchad b'taharato apnimit. When the true Jewish spirit is freed from the choking feeling of the Greek spirit, that takes pride only in the cosmetic veneer and the external, But shetachteho, but underneath this Greek veneer, shochenet kiul v'tuma, there is ugliness and tuma. Hashichrur shezachinu lo al yedei hitarudut hakedusha shel tchiyat haruach haleumi. You know what I'm talking about, he says? He says the kind of tahara that we were able to find when all of a sudden there is a new, there's this renaissance of kedusha shel tchiyat haruach haleumi, of this national, of this national spirit, al yedei gibore kinat hakodesh achashmonaim hakohanim hakedoshim. And this is what the Kohanim did. They wanted to bring back the spirituality together with the strength, the power of the body and the soul to Eretz Yisrael, and rid themselves of the tuma and the ugliness of Greek culture, of degenerated Greek culture. This is a model that has allowed for us to be able to aspire for during all times and through all subsequent generations. You've got to understand that there's a hitnakshut shel ruach yavanim, ruach Yisrael, degenerated Greek culture and authentic Jewish culture is constantly at odds with one another. Zeu process, this is a process, she'eino posek ad asher yafuach hayom hagadol, that will not stop until we see the big day. Hinei anochi noten lachem in teze Mashiach. This is an, you know, this is a an unending tension. Asher bo yihye nitzdak hakodesh, and the ultimate ways will be justified. And you know, in acharis hayamim, in yemos haMashiach, that we are right. Omnam koach hachayim hagadol hatamun ba'or hatzanua shebnei haChanukah. But you've got to realize, indeed, that the incredible power of life that is symbolized in this little Chanukah candle, line 10, Hu mavtiach lanu et bitchono shel hanitzachon shel hanetzach Yisrael. That is the guarantee of the supremacy of our way. Yemu yachmeru amayim ha'achurim shel yimei achudlin ha'soharim ha'rotzim livloa kol ha'kodesh. Let all the ugly and polluted waters come of secularism and try to inundate and cover over Kodesh. Yishtifu bi'izuzah asham imalchut v'amamim. Let them come with power and ra'ash and noise from all of the nations and all of the kingdoms. Aval chosen Yisrael la'ad lo yimaed. But we are chosen, chisun. You know what chisun means? Vaccination. We are vaccinated against it. All of this pollution, we have vaccination. Betochiyuta shel nishmat ha'adam yeshna hakara. In the core of the neshama of any human being, there is the recognition, there's the consciousness, shebelo o hakodesh. Without that heavenly light, belo nitzotzei hakedusha, ha'mechayim et hakol, without that basic nuclear energy, the nitzotz kedusha, the sparks of holiness that gives life to everyone, ein emda lo leruach ha'odom v'lo lechevrato, it'll be impossible for human spirit to exist, not society, nor society, l'le'umav, nor nations, l'malchiyotav, nor empires. V'heichan hu ha'otzar asher ha'or hazeh ha'kadosh be'etzem taharato ganuz. Where can we spot this hidden light of Tahara? Hevi Omer, I submit that Ba'oto Goy Kadosh, there's one holy nation, Asher Mini Az Adolam, from time immemorial, Hu Hinehu Noseat HaDegel Shel Tviyat HaKedusha B'Taharat HaBa'olam. That one nation carries the flag, the banner of Kedusha in its purest sense throughout the world. Now, clearly, under such circumstances, then you understand the symbol that Ner Chanukah has got to be outside. Okay? You've got to be able, because this is the whole salvation of the world. Ruach, and at the same time, dynamism, physical dynamism, to be able to show the world. And he continues on. Bitim Nomaliot, line 17. Hinenu malgishim bikirbeinu omet shel hachraza pumbit. When things are normal, and the scales aren't too heavily tipped against us, we can have the strength for hachraza pumbit, for telling the world that we have the key to human success. Yede'u kol ba'ei olam, let the whole world know, amitalchim ba'atzot ha'chayim, walking around on this earth, ki ol olam lanu, we have eternal light and direction, guidance. Umeitanu kanaim lanhir bahem va'al yadam eretz v'chutzot. We have the ability to be able to bring this light to the entire world and to every and every, any chutzot, chutz, other outside civilization. Umitzvat ner Chanukah, and this is what ner Chanukah means, and that's Aseh Melech Kadosh Hazeh. That's what Pirsum HaNisa means. The ability to tell the world that we have the secret generator for human perfection for the entire world and every single society. Mitzvah, and the mitzvah therefore is L'Hanicha al Pesach B'Somi B'Chutz. It's got to be outside to be able to show the world that this is it. And, not only that, we are not going to go ahead and hide it for us. We are going to bedafke want to share it with everyone else. There's no sense in hiding it. He l'anichal petach beitomi b'chutz, outside. Not so with the Dam Pesach. The Dam Pesach that we had to take and smear on the Mashkov was only for Jews to be able to defy the Avodah Zorah of Mitzrayim. K'ma'aseh Eretz Mitzrayim lo ta'asu. From here on in, we had to convince ourselves that we can go ahead and take a seh, which was a holy object in Mitzrayim, and shecht it, because Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Because this is what the Rabbanu Shel Olam told Moshe, and no longer are we subservient to anyone else but Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why the Dam had to be inside. There was no need to show it outside. The Rabbanu Shel Olam knew exactly which house was going to do Korban Pesach. Doesn't need any symbols outside. And Mitzrayim doesn't need it either. The act of defiance of the blood was for the Jew to know that you've started a new system. A new bris. And whenever there's a new bris, there has to be dam. Not so with Ner Chanukah. Ner Chanukah is bedafka to be able to share outside.
Can you just explain what the Lubavitcher Rebbe is doing?
Maybe the Lubavitcher Rebbe holds somewhat from Rav Kook.
Just explain.
Well, you didn't hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think you got your priorities mixed up, man. Maybe the Lubavitcher Rebbe somewhat holds from Shitas Rav Kook.
Jerry, explain
you
to
see.
Me. What,
because Chris Avraham is putting up menorahs in
Lubavitch. Yeah, that's the whole deal.
In Jersey City, in Elizabeth, maybe even in Passaic this year.
I thought really you were talking just really about
City Hall.
Okay.
But that's also something which you were talking in general.
Unquestionably.
They go in front of the Lincoln.
Clifton already had it.
Clifton has a menorah.
Clifton has a city hall.
But the rabbi is very insistent on this.
Yeah, but it's just in general. Their messages out in the streets. And they go out in the streets. The mitzvah tanks and everything.
But this is dafka with the...
Yeah, no question. It's the whole lineage.
It's right
there. It's all
lineage. I never...
What took the Lubavitcher Rebbe and all the other Jews to put up these Chanukah menorahs?
First of all, first of all, you should know that the Jewish establishment, and we have one of the most eloquent spokesmen for the Jewish establishment right here in Psy Clifton. That's Mark Stern. Marcy, right? The man is a brilliant constitutional lawyer. They tell me, and he works for the American Jewish Committee. And Bedafke he holds not, and the whole Jewish establishment holds not. Not to do this. And Lubavitch says, but Dafke, we are going to do it. Give me two lines and you'll see what the story is.
Well, how can you compare the American Jewish
community? Hold on. No. I'm not saying that.
American Jewish community is
one
organization. What about all the other organizations?
No, I'm telling you that in the main, the organizations don't hold from the shtick, even the firm ones. Hey, and Lubavitch does.
Lubavitch
does. Pirsum HaNisa is in your house.
There's a big controversy.
Not in City Hall. Not in Fifth Avenue by the Hotel Pierre.
It's a bigger person than you, so.
I hear what you're saying, but you see, what they begrudge Lubavitch is the grandstand dramatics, flying in with these cherry pickers and the helicopters. So that's the you know, that's the brilliance of this rabbi. He will go ahead and use every single modern day technique to be able to bring the message. You see, you can't take it away unless you're jealous. If you're jealous, then you throw stones. There is a sense of jealousy. Anyone could have done it. I'm jealous. Because if I came to Young Gazelle, if I came to the shuls, and I asked them for the hundreds of dollars that was needed, as I did in the past, they'd tell me, go jump in the lake. Can't do it, you won't do it, whatever. Total stranger comes, he says, you're not going to do it. I'll already find the money. That's all. I'm jealous. Simple. The only difference is that my jealousy brings me closer to them. It doesn't alienate them. Others are jealous and they become alienated.
It's interesting whether you're comparing it to Purim. Purim, the mitzvah really are but mostly within the house.
100%. 100%.
Sort of the reading.
Yeah, 100%. But remember always, it isn't only the Ruach. As we learned up until now, it is Ruach plus Neshama that Chanukah represents. And if you think about it, that's why you need Neros by Chanukah. Ner has two elements to it. Two symbolic elements. It has the candle itself, in other words, the fuel itself, whether it is oil, the shemen, or it's a ner, that's the guf. And the neshama is represented by the flame. You see, guf and neshama has to go together. And only then, haneros halolu kodesh ein vein lanu rishus lishtamesh vein ela lirosam bilvad. Stam, a vial of shemen, has no kedusha. You light it with the nefesh, represented by the flame, and the guf, represented by the shemen or the ner, and then it becomes kodesh. That message has got to be told the world in order to be able to show the absolute ugly, polluted ways of Yavon and the stink that we call Madison Avenue, which is no less Yavon than Greece of old. That has to be subdued.
The Hefek also said, because they're so like pure energy also, if you have electricity, it's also not, it's not kosher for me.
That's it. Take the two lines, line 19. Be'et asher ha-nahara mekudeshet mofiahi. When these holy emanations appear, 1920, I'm sorry. When these holy emanations appear, gam mibachutz ein anu tzrichim lidog. When we are capable of taking it public and going public, then you don't have to worry. Kval yodim anu betuchim. We not only know, but we are sure, as at that time, she'apanim hu malei ora, that internally we are full of light. Ta'ama ki tov sachara lo yichbe b'alayla ne'ra. The pasuk that he uses, right? At night, the light won't go out. You know why? Ta'ama, the reason, you taste and see that ki tov sachara, that the schora, that your wares, your stock in trade, is tov, is good. Not only for you, but for the whole world, for the whole human race. If you're able to take the kedushas aguf and the kedushas anefesh together, you'll be able to see that it's tov, it's good, and everyone else will be able to see it. And if everyone else sees it's good, you get out there and you advertise. When you have something good, you got to get it out there. Without the advertisement, you want to make it iconoclastic, you want to go ahead and make it secretive, you're foolish. The Tikkun HaOlam depends on this. We've got to be. This is a battle of ideas that is going on now for millennia, for thousands of years, that we have to subdue this insanity of Yavon, this insanity of Madison Avenue and Fifth Avenue. And more at Hanukkah time than in any other time. Did you walk Fifth Avenue, Bruce, today? No? No? Yesterday? Okay, what do you see in the windows already? Oh, yeah. It's already. Zrizim Magdim in Lamitzvos, Main Avenue. It's not even Thanksgiving already. And the beauty of the tinsel is out.
I was just going to say that. It's the sky.
And it's bedafka now that you have to answer that.
Yeah.
With the kedusha, with the kedusha of goof and the neshama.
They got these Christmas decorations in the city. Aren't there laws about that? They put up Christmas.
What kind of laws? What are you talking about? It's for commerce. It's for commerce. There's nothing religious about those signs. But there's nothing religious about those signs.
They all work to Christ and they declare that secular. Go figure that out.
You're still in a Christian country, no matter what
they call that.
Why shouldn't they allow Christmas?
They allow that, they shouldn't allow the tinsel.
Be glad you're allowed to.
But they allow
you to get up, go to school, go to work, and no one bothers you.
You're not in that Israel. What are you talking about?
That's true.
Let them have their holiday. I don't see a problem.
You see, but as far as we are concerned, there has to be a response.
That's
the issue. There has to be a response.
That's why I agree.
And it's got to be a response that is able to show the words that he used in line 5, the kiul, the ugliness, and the tumah, and the degeneratedness. And that's what tumah means, degenerative. Of this, all of this tinsel, it's nothing more than sheker. You'll stop the war on December 25th in the name of brotherly love and the Prince of Peace. And the minute the 25th is over, they won't wait a second, not even a Suffolk Yom and Suffolk Lila. The minute Shkia comes and they're fighting again. The same garbage over again. Just like we do on Yom Kippur. All right? But Lahavdil Alafalfi Abdullahs. We still can dance in Sukkot and Simchas Pesach Shavuot. We have a little more, but this is the issue. This ugliness has got to be fought, and you cannot fight it privately. You cannot fight it when the turtle goes into its shell. You bedafke when you catch on to this latch of perfection. It's got to be outside. It's a tough one. So. What I'm trying to show you is that my little pretext over there is not such a pretext. It is an entire Weltanschauung, it is a Derech HaChaim, it is a way of living, it is an aspect of life that there is no such thing in this world as, what should I say, Chol, it's all Kodesh. And the author of Kodesh is a Rabbanu Shalom, whether it is Guf or Neshama. And whatever incident occurred, there is a Rabbanu Shalom in this world who is the Manhig HaOlam, who is the Borei HaOlam, and if that's the way he wanted it, that's the way it's going to be. Then finished. Our reaction is, are we going to play the game like a bunch of schizophrenics and distort reality? Or are we going to look at it with the kind of reality that existed in 1967? Ashrei shezochinu lechach, fortunate are we that we have lived in this day and age to have been able to see it, to be able to once again convince us that there is a Ribbono shel Olam in the world. We sing to him, Adon Olam Hashem Malach B'Tehem Kol Yitzin Nivra. And we sing it every single day, morning, noon, and night, and over again, and finished. And that this was Nisei Hashem, Nisim Geluyim, that we were able to have Rabim Biyad Ma'atim, and we lived through the closest experience that we have had since the days of Rabbi Akiva, to be able to go ahead and see what Chanukah the original was. You see.
Can I ask you a question? The first page, going back to our first...
Sharansky, yeah.
How can we reconcile the statement of this person to, if you remember last year, one of the Onik Shabbats, you spoke at the Parkoffs, you recall, and there was a document that was not made public, it was just for the people there, that was published by the Beis Yaakov of Washington Heights.
Well, no, all the Beis Yaakovs.
Under Breuer's supervision, whatever.
Breuer was only the secretary there. Careful.
Whatever. And
he
one
was...
of the requirements for institutions who wanted to join this network of Beis Yaakovs was very specifically, no Zionist affiliations permitted.
Good.
How can we reconcile this to that?
It's as simple as could be. At least in my mind. I maintain that this is all distortion.
You mean the Washington Heights is distortion? This
distortion
is
of Ashkafa. The reason for the distortion is only one thing. I've been working on that for years. I can prove to you with simple documents that it is a subconscious feeling of inferiority on behalf of the Hasidic and the yeshiva world, all put together. We are such a small speck in relationship to the rest of the Jewish world. And you want to know something? In 2 seconds, they can count us out. And we'll be out on our fannies.
What do you mean? Who, yeah. Who can count? Who?
The Jewish establishment.
In the Chutzlaret, here?
All over, including Eretz Yisrael.
Count who out?
Count
the Jewish community out.
You mean the observant Jewish community?
Yeah. Count them out.
But, you know,
nothing would change except Jewish education. Except Jewish education.
You know, but you... Most of the time that's usually your emphasis is on the psychological level. And usually I would be more than inclined to agree with you, especially since I'm sitting here to say it instead of in America. But when you look at what Rav Kook says, Rav Kook seems to offer another explanation.
Where are you on page 4?
Well, what we just read. Here. And not in the Hanukkah part, the other part.
Ah, so page 3.
3. I mean, what he says is that this emunah that we would have of Guf and Neshama together, that the reason that we don't have that, it's not really a psychological problem, because a psychological problem is a universal problem. It's a problem that we don't have a connection with the actual land. Since the Dada Muna can only come out of being, you know...
In Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, of having an agricultural life.
I hear what you're saying.
I mean, he seems to say that, you know, is that... I mean, his thinking on this seems to be very...
I hear what you're
organic.
Saying. I hear what you're saying. I buy it. But I'm not saying anything different. I'm saying, however, that I am entirely convinced that every time there is... a public isser from our frum world in which we all share and we're part of, I can show you clearly without being a trained psychologist that it comes from roots of inferiority. We'll call it a gullus mentality, unquestionable about that, and there is a sense of hostility with the rest of the establishment that you're not listening to me. I am, after all, the Gadol b'Yisrael. I am the maven of Torah, and you're not listening to me. You think you know better.
So when we respond to them, we can't say, when we have encounters with people who think this way, we can't say, well, you know, you're only saying that because this is, you know, you have an inferiority complex. You have to deal with these people on a... how do you deal with them?
Practical person.
You say you're representing the halacha? I mean, maybe you have to do it that way. You have to say, you deal with them on a halacha basis and say, look, you have a wrong understanding of what the halacha is. In other words, I mean, somebody did level the criticism when he heard your tapes that he felt that when you argue to the psychology of the individual, you're skirting around the Torah issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, I didn't agree with him.
That's the biggest cop-out in the world.
But I figured I'd at least let you respond.
I'm saying that's the biggest cop-out in the world.
That statement?
Yeah. I can hide behind the mask of halacha. And that's exactly what's being done. I will admit to you, as Rav Kook admits here on page 2, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim. Now, those who will say differently from me, Rav Kook, there's going to be a machlokas. You're going to say that I'm wrong. Okay? But ultimately, you know what's going to determine what's going to be right? The ultimate psychological adjustment and alignment of all of these three things, Guf, Neshama, and Eretz. Now, Guf, Neshama, and Eretz, when it is all aligned together, needs a tzahal, and it needs creative halacha, that they are not ready and capable of doing in Ponovich or in any of the Hasidic yeshivas. That's why they're black cat, and that's why they don't go to the army. There is a petrification. There is a golus mentality of Varsha and Vilna and Krakow, where you didn't have to worry about arms and police, because you never knew the next day where you're going to be, if you were to be allowed to be there. There was a resignation that Hashem Yazar and finished, and you say Tehillim and finished. That's not what you hear over here in the Six-Day War, you see. And that is all a psychological demeanor. That's the issue. Now, if you talk to me halacha, give me 1 second. If you talk to me halacha, so I have to admit to you, halacha yochid v'rabim is halacha k'rabim. Most of the yeshiva world, most of the Hasidic world disagree with Rav Kook. They disagree with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Finished. Mm-hmm. Okay? But who are the ones who are serving Kugel and Cholent and getting them in?
Getting them in where?
Getting them in to be Bali Tshuva.
Oh.
Who are the ones who are being resisted now in the Israeli establishment because they are making too many Bali Tshuva these days? It's not Lubavitch.
Really?
Certainly. Yeah. What are you talking about? They're not being allowed onto army bases.
Oh, by the secular.
That's right, by the secular establishment.
They're being too successful.
And how? Now, how are they being successful? By calling them a bunch of schmutzniks? Now, it's not only Lubavitch, there were others also.
They're being turned off from army.
They were allowed to go onto army bases.
They were being. It was a Knesset crisis a while ago.
They had too many defectors. You know, it would take a pilot, train them 3 or 4 years to fly $1 million airplanes, cost them thousands of dollars to train the pilots. And they were losing, and these guys would get, and they would say, I can't fly, can't do it anymore.
Well, so why can't he fly if he's...
Shabbos. I want to go learn.
But he's in the army.
I want to go learn.
We have halachas.
Fine, I want to go learn.
What about the mother? Now they... just yesterday I heard in the news... Now, the Knesset passed a law that any yeshiva that wants support from the government must fly the Israeli flag.
Yeah, this is nothing new.
That's good.
This has been going on for a couple of years.
Yeah, but the many yeshivas are opposed to it. They are making them shy, you know. They're opposed to it.
Because I want to tell you something.
But they want the money.
Did they pass it?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope they did.
I just want to tell you something. There's a big problem.
Like Congressman.
Because if you think that I'm going to let you get away and think that just because you're a tzioni, you're crystal clear, you're wrong.
If you're crystal clear,
this Maisa started, it's over a year ago, when there was an administrative tzav order that all yeshivas, in order to get their stipend from the government, has got to sign a declaration of loyalty to a certain basic platform. Okay, what's the basic platform? The Zionist platform, called the Jerusalem Program. Mizrahi itself, the Bnei Akiva Yeshivas itself, refused to sign. Now, Bnei Akiva Yeshivas are flying the flag. Bnei Akiva Yeshivas wear kippah sruga. Bnei Akiva Yeshivas go to the army, that's all that's there. What did they have in it? And thank God, for once in their lives, they were probably intellectually honest. And they realized that there was something cooking here. There was a sense of imposition that this law wanted to bring on those yeshivas who bedafka would not want to sign it or could not sign it. Otherwise, I'll get kicked in the head by some other chugim in Makor Baruch or Geula or Me'asharim or wherever else. Now, I am not so terribly concerned of the black hat yeshivas that they don't go to the army. I'm not. You know why? Because probably 90% of them are not war worthy or army worthy. The costs to whip them into some shape of discipline so that the army will be proud of them is far too great. What's more, there are plenty of black hats in the army, and they serve with distinction. Tzitzis out, beards as long as could be, the same uzi, the same green madin uniforms, and that is a fact. It's a fact that we haven't capitalized on. Those couple of thousands that Moshe Dayan wanted to go after, better keep them out of the army, Gival. You got a fifth column over here. Everyone will be walking right, they'll walk left. Everyone will be walking up, they'll decide that the Gemara says to walk down. The misfits, probably. The best thing in the world is to keep them in the yeshivas.
Jay said something else, though. He felt that Gedolei Yisrael could not be produced in yeshivas that interrupted the learning and took them out of school.
Agree 100%.
You do agree?
Agree 100%. Agree 100%.
And he felt that the Talmidei Chachamim were not coming from the Hester Yeshiva.
Who said this, Jerry? I'm sorry.
But from these Black Hat Yeshiva.
Who said that, Jerry? I'm sorry.
Jay Miller. Rabbi Jay Miller.
On that point, I'm not so sure.
Which point?
The last point. That from Hester Yeshivas, you don't have Talmidei Chachamim. Who can be?
I'm quoting him. Carl Scherer learned the Yeshiva HaKotel, and he can learn with any of those guys down his block.
Yeah, but there are many more, and who can even learn better?
Susan Joe?
That's not what the guy's talking about. He's not talking about Balabatim who can learn. Okay. He's talking about
Carl Scherer.
We're talking about producing Gedolei.
Good. Okay. I'll tell you why I agree with you. I agree with you for the same reason that if you want to create a top-notch cadre of physicians, you've got to take that guy and free him from anything and everything and make sure that he's going to go to medical school and he should have his subvention and subsidy, and then make him a resident, and then let him go on and do research. You've got to free him from everything to be able to immerse himself totally in the art and the science of medicine.
Right.
Agree with that? Simple. It's the same thing. Okay. How many Gedolei Yisrael are you going to go ahead and produce and manufacture in relationship to, 4 million? What's the population of Israel now? 4 million? How many?
I don't know.
A fraction of a percent.
I think, again, to come back to what we just read from Rav Cook, I think that this mimer from Rav Cook would be holic on what you just said. We would disagree with that. That a God of Israel is not someone only who would be able to have him here. In his terms, then he'll be able to have the ruach, but also has to be able to have this emunah.
And I think not everyone has to go to an army. Let him go to Jack LaLanne. You understand what I'm saying? That's what he's saying. If you're not capable of going to war, so you don't go to war.
Okay, but that's different
than what Sherry was saying.
There are other functions that you said.
So that's different than, yes.
So you know what I've said over and again. I mean, you'd vomit if you hear it again. You know my shita. You take the biggest pushtak in Sahal who protected you and me in Eretz Yisrael, who let my children learn there and lets my sister live in Yerushalayim, who exploded bombs in front of our house, detonated bombs in front of our house twice. And every Erev Shabbos, you have to go get shoe polish and shine his boots. If you don't have shoe polish, then the least you could do is lick his boots. Okay? And the further away he is,
the more hateful he is of the Datiyim, that's the one who should be on your priority list to make sure that Shabbos you invite him for Ashtikel Kugel, and don't, even if he won't say a bracha the first time. That's my insanity, what can I tell you? Finished. Yes, there are other things that the yeshiva guys could do. They could go ahead and oil up the Uzis, and they can go ahead and shine the boots of those who are sacrificing their goof and their neshama on the battlefield. Okay? It was an interesting incident. Six-Day War, we're talking about Six-Day War. Shalvim, Yeshivat Shalvim, was on the border. Mamash on the border. They had trenches. Because a couple of hundred feet ahead was Jordan. Yeah. That was it. So they decided to take barbed wire along that path, along that border, and stretch it. And the tzav, the pikudah, the order was, the military order was to go ahead and keep on from kvutzah to kvutzah, from territory to territory. You just kept on working throughout the entire night to fortify the border with more barbed wire. They came up to the territory of Shalvim. Are you sure? And the secularists... And the yeshiva guy said to them, what do you want to do? You want to talk politics here? Or you want to get to work? And when they saw that, they meant business. With the tzitzis and with everything, that they are working through the night and haven't been on Shabbos. Working through the night to string this barbed wire. It was a different attitude altogether. That doesn't mean that they all served in the army. It meant that they were yeshiva, whatever the case may be. The mere fact is that there's a certain attitude. You're laying your life on the line for me, for my yeshivas, for my Yerushalayim, for my Bnei Brak, for my Ponovich, for my Chevron, for my Ashdod, for my Amshinov, for my Ger, for my Bells, for my Meir Sha'orim, and we are so closely identified with that. We are closer to that than we are to the other side. What's it to talk about? We are closer to Satma than we are to the left-wing Shomer HaTzair, correct? As much as you will admit it, if you had a choice between eating Satma meat or Shomer HaTzair meat, if you had no other schools but Satma schools or Shomer HaTzair kibbutz, where would you send your kid?
Satma.
You'd become a vegetarian. You're full of baloney. You're full of baloney. Where would you send your kid if... Bruce, you're hedging the issue.
I don't know.
You don't know. You'd say you'd send them to public school?
I don't know. I mean, no, I'd move. I mean, if I had them, I'd go to...